I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, more than 6 million Americans live with Alzheimer's disease. By 2050, this number is projected to reach 13 million. An additional 1 in 10 people over the age of 65 have dementia, while 22% of older adults live with some form of cognitive impairment. And it isn't just the elderly who are afflicted. Diagnosis rates are rising in younger adults. Alzheimer's disease is projected to cost the United States trillions of dollars over the next 50 years unless a major breakthrough occurs in prevention or treatment. Ending Alzheimer's should be a priority for you and for the nation, and we are learning more about how that is being done. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. It was once widely accepted that as we age, our bodies become less efficient. We slow down, but now we know that there are many things that we can do to maintain a healthy body and live a long life. But what about the brain's health? What if it doesn't keep up? It's also been widely accepted if you live long enough, you will eventually have some cognitive decline. It was thought that dementia wasn't a disease, it was just a normal consequence of aging. But now we know better, that there are ways to avoid getting those age-related cognitive disorders, and that if you can take care of your brain, there are steps that you can take. In the new book, The Ageless Brain, How to Sharpen and Protect Your Mind for a Lifetime, Dr. Dale Bredesen expands on his previous statements that Alzheimer's disease can be cured, even reversed, and he has a protocol to do that. Dr. Dale Bredesen, welcome to The Source.
Thanks so much. Good to talk to you, David.
So our phone lines are open. If you've got a question or comment about how to have an ageless brain and sharpen and protect your mind for a lifetime, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK, and you can email us at thesource@tpr.org. Dr. Bredesen, so why isn't that front page news? Why isn't that like, why haven't you had a ticker tape parade if you've been able to cure Alzheimer's?
So we've never used the term cure. We say reversing cognitive decline, and that's what we've done. We've proven that. We've published that in multiple papers, and we're actually in the middle right now of a randomized controlled clinical trial, and the interim analysis of that trial, which will be completed in October, shows exactly the same thing we've seen before. Those who are on standard of care continue to decline, unfortunately, and those who are on the protocol that we develop, which is a precision medicine protocol. So it simply asks what's causing this problem, and it addresses those things. And there are dozens of potential things that you have to address. And when you do that, people do get better. We've also recently published the first examples of people who not only got better, but stayed better for over a decade. So we're seeing some unprecedented results. And the answer to your question, which is an excellent question, is because doctors want more and more evidence. So when you have something new, they'll say, well, we'd like to see a larger trial. We'd like to see a double-blind placebo-controlled trial. We'd like to see it in more, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So the bar keeps going higher and higher. But when you have something like Alzheimer's that just there has been nothing, then you've got to start somewhere. So we originally published anecdotes, then we published a series, then we published a proof of concept trial 2 years ago. Now we are going to be publishing this randomized controlled trial. So we'll get there, but it'll take a while for people to accept it.
Well, if someone today, this, you know, they've realized, you know, things aren't, I'm having some problems, you know, I'm not thinking that good like I used to. And so they go to the doctor. The doctor says, yeah, it looks like, I'm sorry to tell you, like you have Alzheimer's disease. We're going to put you on this prescription that is going to address the development of the amyloid that we know develops in the brain, a hallmark of Alzheimer's. But, you know, it was thought that that amyloid plaque that, you know, happens in the brain during Alzheimer's, that was the problem. Oh, your brain's getting this goop up in there and that's slowing you down. But now there's evidence saying that actually that goop, that amyloid, is actually the brain trying to protect itself?
Yes, isn't that interesting? So for years and years, of course, since 1906, when Alzheimer first described what has become to be known as Alzheimer's disease and showed the pathology and showed those sticky plaques that you just mentioned, many people have thought those are, quote, the cause of this. But we now know, after many years of research in the laboratory and from many laboratories, that this is the brain's response to various insults. So if you've ever seen those insects inside amber, they are surrounded by that amber and trapped in there. That is essentially what the amyloid is doing. So it turns out that this amyloid that is associated with Alzheimer's is part of your innate immune system. That is to say, the initial part of your immune system that responds to insults. So whether you get exposed to, for example, a virus like herpes simplex coming from your lip, or whether you get exposed to a bacterium, for example, P. gingivalis, which comes from periodontitis in your mouth, or whether you get exposed to a spirochete, like from Lyme disease, Borrelia, that's another one. And there are on and on, there are many of these chronic inflammatory processes. Your brain responds by surrounding and killing these microbes with amyloid. So when you look in there, you say, oh, this is Alzheimer's disease. Yes, you have actually responded to these insults. So when we are using these personalized precision medicine protocols, we are evaluating what these different insults are, and we are addressing those, helping your brain to get rid of these things, and then rebuilding the synapses that have been lost. And you mentioned, you know, someone having problems. This is the most common thing. And unfortunately, the doctors tell the patients, oh, you're just getting a little older. But we're seeing people in their 40s and 50s. I mean, this used to be thought to be a disease of the 70s, 80s, 90s. It's turned out to be the disease of your 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s that is diagnosed years and years later. You can see the biochemistry coming, though, for years. And there are some new blood tests that are wonderful that will tell you when you're headed for this problem. So there's a real paradigm shift in the way we think about this and the way we prevent it and the way that we treat it successfully.
So the amyloid could be like a cast on your arm. If you didn't know any better, you would think, oh, the cast is keeping you from using your arm. That's the problem. But you don't recognize that the cast is there reacting, is there put there intentionally so you can heal.
That's exactly right. This is a response to these various insults, and it can be various toxins, various inflammagens, exposed to, you know, mold-produced toxins, for example, infections, as I mentioned. This is a response to various insults that your brain experiences over time.
So it's not, when you say insults, you know, it's not you're an idiot. I mean, not like that, but it's like stressors,
yes.
and things that get through the blood brain barrier, which is more porous than we actually realized. There are a lot of things that are stressing on the brain, and there are reactions to that, and then just overwhelm it over time.
Exactly right. There was a very interesting experiment done a couple of years ago where people wanted to look at that blood-brain barrier that you just mentioned and say, okay, we're going to introduce an organism, and in this case it was Candida, which is a yeast, and we're going to see how many months it takes that for the blood-brain barrier to finally let this thing. Can it exclude it for the whole life of the rat? What happened? The answer was a couple of minutes. So it really, although we think of it as a barrier, yes, it's a barrier to certain chemical species. There are many things, unfortunately, that get across that blood-brain barrier. And there's a lot of two-way traffic across that barrier. So it's a relative barrier. And you mentioned earlier about someone coming in with problems. Let me just tell you a great example. Just a couple of weeks ago, I got a call from a guy, 53 years old, very successful venture capitalist who had started having problems with his cognition, went to a very famous university thinking this is the best place. And they told him in no uncertain terms, you have Alzheimer's disease, you're going to die. There's absolutely nothing you can do about it. And then we started looking to see what's causing his problem.
Right. So we're going to be talking about that, looking at the upstream impacts. What is causing Alzheimer's? What can you do about it to sharpen your mind for a lifetime? Our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The source is back in 1 minute.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're speaking with Dr. Dale Bredesen. He is a renowned neurologist and researcher in Alzheimer's disease, and he has made a bold claim about the future of Alzheimer's. He has said that ours may be the last generation to fear Alzheimer's. He has been backed with decades of research. He says that we now understand the root causes of cognitive decline, and we do have the tools to prevent, in some cases, reverse its early stages. His newest book is The Ageless Brain, How to Sharpen and Protect Your Mind for a Lifetime. If you've got a question or comment, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So, Dr. Bredesen, what should you do? I mean, if you go to the doctor, you go to the university, like you were telling me before break, and they tell you, don't buy any green bananas, you've got Alzheimer's, what should they do?
Great point. This particular person actually then went to someone we've trained over 2,000 physicians from all around the world, and he got better. And he's continuing. He's not back to perfect yet, but he's far better than he was. And he's on a healing journey and doing quite well. And I expect that he'll do that for years to come.
Comparison is that if you get Alzheimer's, you just expect to get worse.
Exactly. And that's unfortunately what happens with the current medications for Alzheimer's. They don't make you better. Even the so-called breakthrough antibodies do not make people better. The best they do is to slow the decline. So you simply have a deceleration in your decline by about 25 to 30%. That's it. And of course, and that's with the side effects of microhemorrhage in the brain, swelling in the brain, a few deaths here and there. So there's certainly concern about the side effects, and we can do better by understanding what's actually causing the problem.
So let's start off with genetics. Some people, they've been tested, they have markers that show that they have a high risk for Alzheimer's and other cognitive-related diseases.
Yes, and there are about 100 different genes that are associated with risk for Alzheimer's, but it's important to underline the term risk. It doesn't mean you're going to get it. It means that you're have an increased risk, just like having a high cholesterol increases your risk. And so there's a tremendous amount you can do about it. And the most common one that everyone looks at is called ApoE4. So apolipoprotein E carries around your fats. It's a little bit like your butcher. It carries around the fat, but it turns out also to be very important for inflammatory pathways. And so you want to know if you've got zero copies of this, one copy or two copies. You get a copy from your mother, a copy from your father, and you can either have a copy of ApoE 2, 3, or 4. So for example, I checked myself. I'm an ApoE 3, 3. I got a copy of 3 from my mother, copy from my father. So if you have no copies of ApoE4, your lifetime risk of Alzheimer's is about 9%. Not zero, but not terribly high. If you have a single copy, and that's 75 million Americans, most of whom don't know it, your lifetime risk is 30%. And if you have two copies, and again, most people don't know it, and that's 7 million Americans who have two copies of ApoE4, your lifetime risk is about 90%. Most likely you will get Alzheimer's. And so if everyone would simply check when they're 35 or 40 and then follow your status through the rest of your life, you can do just fine. And there's a wonderful website started by someone who's an ApoE4-4, Julie G., who's done remarkably well now for over a dozen years. And this is called APOE4.info. And there are over 8,000 people on there that share their information. Most of them are on some version of the protocol that we developed and doing quite well. So again, knowing early, very helpful.
Well, without, you know, getting a test, can I just look at my family tree and to see, well, my mom and dad didn't get it, my grandparents didn't have it, you know, therefore I should probably think I'm pretty covered?
Well, unfortunately, you can get it without your parents or grandparents getting it. So you're right. If your parents and grandparents got it, there's an increased risk that you have. So your risk is lower if they didn't, but it's not zero. And so we do see people all the time. The guy that I just mentioned to you that went to the university, he had zero copies of APOE4 and happened to get it even in his 50s.
And that's because of the nature, the nurture situation, the things
that's
around
exactly
him, environment.
Right. That is exactly right. And there are dozens of things that can contribute. That's one of the things that hadn't been appreciated before, that there are so many potential factors, but they break down into a few groups. There are three major groups of contributors, and those are, number one, energetics. In other words, the source of support for your brain, blood flow, oxygenation, mitochondrial function, the status of ketones and glucose in your blood. These all nourish your brain. They support your brain. So as you begin to lose those, you literally go into a point where the supply is not meeting the demand. The second big group is inflammation. These infections we talked about earlier, those can all contribute. Anything where you are responding to these inflammatory organisms or inflammatory chemicals increases your risk. And then the third one is toxicity. And these toxins come in three different types. They are the inorganics, like air pollution. A lot of work showing air pollution increases risk. Unfortunately, recent work showing that microplastics seem to be one of the things that increases risk as well. The second group is the organics, and it's things like formaldehyde and benzene and glyphosate and toluene. And then the third group is the biotoxins, things like trichothecenes and aflatoxin and gliotoxin and ochratoxin A. These are typically toxins made by various mold species, and they are inflammatory, and they also inhibit normal function. So you want to know those three big groups, and then the three smaller groups are the neurotransmitters like acetylcholine. So many of us aren't getting enough choline, for example, in our food. Secondly, trophic support for your brain. That's nutrients, hormones, and neurotrophins. And then the final thing actually is stress, something that as a scientist I didn't used to believe was a big deal. It turns out I was wrong. That, in fact, lots of stress turns out to shrink your brain. That's been well documented. And so dealing with chronic stress is important if you're going to get best outcomes.
Let's go to a phone call. The number is 833-877-8255. We've got a question or comment for Dr. Dale Bredesen about his new book, The Ageless Brain. And we have Veronica. And Veronica, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling to thank Dr. Bredesen for all his work and also you, David, for putting the show on. I am an 80-year-old retired psychiatrist. I noticed first symptoms when I was in my late 60s, and I followed the Bredesen protocol now since 2017. But at that time, I already had quite a bit of brain shrinkage, and I am very proud that I'm still stable and able to live independently.
Well, tell me, so what did you do? What was your, what protocol thing steps did you take?
So I followed the pillars that Dr. Bredesen outlined in his book, The End of Alzheimer's. It is not an easy protocol to follow if you don't have somebody that can really guide you. And at this point in time, I think it's very difficult to find physicians that are versed in this way of addressing Alzheimer's disease. I have had the exposure to Lyme disease I have multiple viral disease viruses that live chronically with me, like Epstein-Barr and herpes viruses. I have been exposed to mold in my previous office, and I have chronic inflammation with Crohn's disease. So I have all these internal and external disturbances. I think what is most helpful about the diet, which makes me be on a slightly ketogenic level, is that it has helped with the energetics of my brain. Before I was well-versed in applying the diet to myself, I had episodes where I was feeling faint or you know, brain foggy, and I could not trust myself to drive or to keep up with appointments that I might have set for that day. And that is gone now that I have a steady supply of ketones to my brain if the sugar isn't utilized properly. It has helped me to have a brain that is no longer resistant to glucose. So my fasting insulin is very low at this point in time, which is good. And I wish practitioners would check fasting insulins, because that is a way to identify people who don't maybe have diabetes in the periphery, but whose brains are already no longer responding well to blood sugar alone. So the diet has helped with the energetics of my brain.
All right, well, Veronica, go ahead, I'm sorry.
I have also increased my physical activity, and that is a very, very important point, because our muscles make mycokines and brain-derived neurotropic factors, and these are all things that help the brain to restore and rebuild. I've also started hormone therapy, because my brain was not getting any hormones anymore when I started this protocol. And so all of that has improved, because the nutrition that goes to the brain is better, between increased circulation and better diet factors. And as Dr. Bredesen said, it is important to address stress factors. In doing meditation or mindfulness exercises, I think, is very important.
Well, Veronica, I want to thank you for calling in, and you sound sharp as a tack, I got to tell you. So that's something to, process. So, Dr. Bredesen, what do you think of Veronica's call?
Yeah, that's fantastic. It's great to hear. And I'm sure she'll be happy to hear the very first patient that we ever reversed cognitive decline came in April of 2012, patient zero. She's just turned 80 herself, and she will be walking starting April 5th. She'll be walking from San Diego to Jacksonville, Florida. She's walking across the United States to show the benefits of this sort of approach.
So I don't understand about the ketones. Can you break that down for somebody who doesn't know about these things?
Yeah, absolutely. So your brain is like a Prius. It only has two kinds of fuels. So you've got to have either glucose or ketones. And when you have metabolic flexibility, which is what she's describing here, you're able to go seamlessly back and forth. But for most of us, and there are over 100 million Americans who have insulin resistance. So they have high insulins, they often have metabolic syndrome, they don't burn either very well. And so when you have that high insulin, you're not able to make ketones. Usually your liver is able to make ketones when you're low on your energy. So you can, sleep through the night and things like that. There are much better ways now that you can figure this out. CGM, of course, has become very popular, continuous glucose monitoring. And so you can see, but the idea is to get both of those, to be able to use glucose when you need it, and to be able to use ketones when you don't have the glucose. And so some people will even take exogenous ketones or take things like coconut oil or take things like MCT oil to get those ketones. And they have been shown to improve cognition in people who have some degree of cognitive decline. So that's why you want to be able to go back and forth, as Veronica described so beautifully.
Well, I'm hearing a lot of words that overlap with the talks we've had about diabetes, about type 2 diabetes.
Yes.
So I'll ask you about that when we come back from the break. Also, we'll get Jeff and Michael on the air as well. Our number is 833-877-8255. We're having a conversation with Dr. Dale Bredesen. His new book is The Ageless Brain, How to Sharpen and Protect Your Mind for a Lifetime. He is an expert. He has been researching dealing with Alzheimer's, and he says he has a way to reverse it. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With us on the line is Dr. Dale Bredesen, an expert in the mechanisms of a neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's disease. And he has a new book out, The Ageless Brain, How to Sharpen and Protect Your Mind for a Lifetime. When we were going to break, we were talking about ketones. A ketone, make sure I got this right, doctor, that it is a molecule typically that our liver produces when the body is low on carbohydrates, and then it kind of provides an alternative fuel for the body. But this is a way that, it's a way to, for the body to thrive, the brain to thrive during fasting and low-carb eating. So is fasting part of your protocol?
Yes, just overnight. So you want to 12 to 15 hours, 12 to 16 hours right in there overnight. So I typically fast 12, 14 hours overnight. If you finish your dinner at 7 p.m., you simply don't want to start eating before 7, 8, or 9 a.m. So you want to give your body a chance. In fact, that's the time when your brain cleans itself out, for example, while you're sleeping and while you're fasting. So yes, that's part of it. And then, as you mentioned, eating a relatively low carb, high good fats. It's a plant-rich, mildly ketogenic diet, which actually has been shown to be the most helpful in terms of supporting the brain, just as we were just hearing from Veronica.
Have you looked at rapamycin and what that might be doing as a way to reverse or treat Alzheimer's?
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of rapamycin simply because it's a drug with its own side effects. What it's really doing is telling your body that you're not recognizing food. It's essentially inhibiting a pathway called mTOR. And so these things that are artificial, that are saying, let's fool nature, they have their place. There are times when it could be appropriate. But you can do the same thing in a more natural, physiological way and get longer-term better outcomes. So we typically are not using rapamycin.
All right, let's go to some callers. Jeff, and Jeff, you're on the air.
Yes. Is there certain foods in your normal diet that you should include or exclude that would help possibly fight off Alzheimer's, dementia, things like that?
All right, Jeff, thank you for that. So what's on the menu? What's off the menu?
It's a great point. So this is what we call KetoFlex 12-3. And in fact, you can actually now get these delivered if you prefer that. But what's off the menu is grains, dairy, simple carbs. So, and of course, ultra processed food. You don't want to be running around eating a lot of chips. Those are not good for you. You don't want to be eating things full of toxins, of course. You don't want to be eating simple carbs. And in fact, there's a professor at University of Colorado, we've published together in the past, Professor Rick Johnson, who has dedicated his career to looking at metabolic pathways and is quite interested in fructose and high fructose corn syrup, and showing that the effects of fructose turn out to be very similar to what you see with Alzheimer's. There are a lot of surprising parallels between those two. So you don't want to be having a lot of high fructose corn syrup and things like that. And what's on the diet is, again, plant-rich, mildly ketogenic diet. You want to have high fiber. You want to have high choline intake because your brain needs that to make memories. You want to have high omega-3s, anti-inflammatory fats, good fats like avocado and things like that. fine to have some meat you want to have. If no problem, you know, having some beef, have some grass-fed beef, have some wild-caught fish, and especially low-mercury fish, such as salmon, mackerel, anchovies, sardines, and herrings, the so-called smash fish. You want to stay away from the largemouth, long-live fish like tuna, shark, and swordfish. And then pastured chicken, fine, no problem. You want to have, again, chicken that's got low toxins in it. You want to be careful of the toxins in the chickens where you have these CAFO-raised chickens are not good for you. And then good vegetables, and especially crucifers. These are helpful for detox, and you want to make it so that the majority of your food is going to be eating the rainbow, vegetables, things like that, having your meat and fish, chicken, things like that, as not in such high amounts that they dominate your diet. So the reality is, as someone who was taught in medical school that, diet really doesn't mean a lot, doesn't make a big difference. It turns out, for optimal function of your brain, there are seven basics: diet, exercise, sleep, stress, brain training, detox, and some basic targeted supplements. And then the two specifics are there infections that you're dealing with? Are there toxins you're dealing with? You've got to look for them, find them, eradicate them. So it turns out that diet is very, very important.
Yeah, I remember being told a calorie is a calorie is a calorie. That's no longer true. That is completely false. And also fermented foods, I guess that's on the menu?
Absolutely, because, of course, it's turned out your microbiome is quite important. Your gut microbiome, and we just heard, of course, Veronica talking about her inflammatory bowel disease. When you have leaky gut, that contributes, that gives you systemic inflammation. That is a problem, and improving your gut microbiome can help that dramatically. Of course, there's a huge amount of research now on all the different organisms involved, which ones are helpful, which ones are not as helpful, which sorts of mixes are important. And these have been shown to be important in Alzheimer's, as well as Parkinson's, as well as brain aging in general. So all of these things are important. And as I mentioned earlier, your oral microbiome is very important as well. And those organisms associated with periodontitis, such as P. gingivalis, T. denticola, F. nucleatum, Prevotella intermedia, all these things, they end up in your brain. There's studies now of the normal brain microbiome.
And the scientific term for that is skunk mouth. So, if that's a sign. Let's go to a caller. Exactly. We have Michael. And Michael, you're on the air.
Yes, I heard y'all talking earlier about testing that would help determine if somebody is going to develop Alzheimer's. I want to know, is that covered by insurance? Do you have any knowledge about that?
All right, Michael, thank you. It's a good question when we start talking about how much Alzheimer's and other cognitive decline problems are going to cost the nation. We should figure out ways to avoid that. So, Dr. Bredesen?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a very good point. And here's the status. People spend, on average, in the United States of America, over $400,000 before dying of Alzheimer's. So we can get rid of 90%+ of that by doing the right things. And you don't have to spend it. It's the way to save a lot of money. But you're right, the insurance companies have not gotten up to speed on this yet. And of course, it behooves them not to pay for anything they don't have to pay for, unfortunately. It's an unfortunate system. So some of the blood tests are paid for and are reimbursed, and some are not. The new blood tests are typically not reimbursed. So the new blood tests are the ones that tell you if you have it. And then the ones that you add are the ones that are then why you have it, what's actually going on. The new ones that have just come out recently are four of them: p-tau-217, which tells you if you are developing Alzheimer's disease; GFAP, which tells you if you have inflammation and attempted regeneration in your brain; NFL, neurofilament light, and that tells you if you have neuronal damage in your brain; and then the A-beta 42-40 ratio, which tells you if you've got ongoing inflammation that looks like it's the Alzheimer's type of inflammation in your brain. So those are the new blood tests. You can get these. Actually, I had them done in my home. It's something that everybody should know. You can literally go on getabrainscan.com and you can get these done in your home or nearby. And then there's the other set of tests, which is, okay, what are the drivers? What are the things that are actually causing this? And there's a whole set of these. We call these the cognoscopy. So you can look at, you can look under, for example, my CQ test or other ways to do this. You want to know your inflammatory status. So things like HSCRP. You want to know your detox status. So for example, your homocysteine, which tells you your status of methylation. You want to know your nutrient levels. So you want to know the status of your vitamin D, your vitamin B12, and things like that. You want to know if you've got heavy metal exposure. So do you have a high mercury? That's an important risk factor for Alzheimer's disease. So that, there's that second set that tells you what are the drivers that I have to be concerned about. The good news is these are far, far less than what you'll be paying if you end up having to go to a nursing home. So it's often very helpful to know.
If you had to pick one thing, one easy pickings idea that people should know to in order to improve their brain health, what?
The important thing to know is that you don't have to get this anymore. That's the most important thing to know. So get evaluated.
Avoid Cokes and super sweet Texas tea.
Absolutely. You want to avoid those three things that I mentioned. You want to avoid grains, dairy, and simple carbs. Absolutely. And also check to see your sleep status. With wearables now, you can see if you're getting enough REM sleep, if you're getting enough deep sleep, if you're getting enough total sleep, and if your oxygenation is dropping while you're sleeping. Those are important risk factors as well.
So meaning like a smartwatch. My smartwatch will tell me if I had a good night's sleep.
Yeah, you can do an Oura Ring or a Fitbit or a Garmin or an Apple Watch, any of those things. Wearables are very helpful for seeing these things coming.
Do the doctors ever ask you, can I see your wearable, tracks, if you are really exercising, it'll show you, you just don't tell the doctor what you're actually doing. And so we'll come back. We'll talk more about, how to protect your brain with Dr. Dale Bredesen, the author of Ageless Brain, How to Sharpen and Protect Your Mind for a Lifetime. You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Our guest is Dr. Dale Bredesen. His new book is The Ageless Brain, How to Sharpen and Protect Your Mind for a Lifetime. And he is an advocate for you not to have Alzheimer's disease. He's saying that we can end Alzheimer's disease. We're at that point right now by taking on his protocol, eating healthy, exercising, avoiding foods that are bad for us, very toxic, a lot of sugar, things like that, processed foods. You can change your life. You can protect your brain. You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255. And let's go to Marcia. And Marcia, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. One of my questions was going to be referencing what associates do you have around San Antonio, Texas, that I could make an appointment with?
So are you training other doctors, or how is that working for you?
We've trained over 2,000 physicians all over the world. And this, yes, there are many in Texas. And I don't have it in front of me. If you go on to, if you go to drbredesen.com, or if you go to my CQ test, in fact, there's a free cognitive test that everyone can take. Go to my CQ test, MyCQtest.com, and you can take a free cognitive test, and that'll point you in the right direction with the various people who have been trained.
So I'm interested in you talking about, I called it skunk mouth, jokingly.
Yeah.
But, having all these bacteria in your mouth, a microbiome in your oral cavity that, you're saying there's a lot of good information there about what's going on in the brain. We know now, we talked for a long time in previous programs about the gut microbiome. We now know that there's a microbiome in the brain. And so the oral microbiome is able to tell us information about that?
Absolutely. Let me first say that, you know, this is not just about avoiding Alzheimer's. This is about improving your sharpness, improving your cognition for your life. We accept that as people get older, they're going to have problems with their thinking. But that's, again, because these things haven't been addressed. So, in fact, this should be a rare problem that people have cognitive decline. Now, you mentioned the oral health. And there are numerous things. In fact, dentists are playing a larger and larger role in helping people to have optimal cognition because there are multiple things. Number one, you mentioned the oral microbiome. And in fact, there are now probiotic toothpaste and prebiotic toothpaste and various rinses that can improve your oral microbiome. Also, of course, mercury we talked about earlier. If you've got amalgam fillings, that may be a concern. There are people who have, of course, gingivitis, just increasing again, you've got some bleeding with your gums. That's going to increase the ability of these organisms to get into your bloodstream. There are just airway closure, people getting more sleep apnea. That also contributes. So improving your airway, very helpful as well. And then there are people who actually have some deep abscesses. They may come from a root canal, for example, that they're unaware of. And so the dentist will do cone beam CTs to look to see if you've got these occult abscesses that need to be treated. So all of these things can contribute to your cognitive status and can impact your cognitive status. So yes, the oral status you have, you mentioned the skunk mouth, all these things, very, very important. And you can improve your oral microbiome. There are, as I said, various rinses, probiotics, and various probiotic and prebiotic toothpastes and things like this. Very, very helpful. And, you know, link up with a dentist who's aware of what's going on in cognition and its relation to oral health.
Let's go to a caller, and our number is 833-877-8255, and we have Carolyn. Carolyn, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a friend who's already been diagnosed with Lewy body dementia. She's at a stage where, I mean, she knows who people are. She's living in assisted living now, but she knows who everyone is. She has a little bit of trouble sometimes with her sentences now. Would there be any information in your book that could still help her?
That's Carolyn, thank you so much for calling in. I'm sorry about your friend. So Dr. Bredesen, we can't give medical advice over the radio, but, you know, for people who have advanced dementia like that, what can be done?
It's a good point. And there are about 1 million patients nationwide with Lewy body disease. So it is, after Alzheimer's, it's one of the most common causes of dementia. And it's unfortunate when you get dementia, you go through those four stages: asymptomatic, subjective cognitive impairment, mild cognitive impairment, and then full dementia. And unfortunately, she's already in that fourth state from what you're telling us. But this is one where, when you look at it, it is typically driven more by toxins. So when we evaluate and treat, and we have had success with Lewy body patients, when we do that, we look particularly at those three groups of toxins that I mentioned, the inorganics, the organics, and the biotoxins. So I hope that her physicians there at the assisted living will be very diligent in looking specifically at those, as well as the basics that we talked about with the diet, et cetera, because that may be able to be of help. There are, by the way, now the first assisted living facilities in the country that are utilizing our protocol and getting very good results. And in fact, they've had people come into the assisted living and leave. There's one called Marama, and there's now one in California, one in Kansas. And so you might check Marama, M-A-R-A-M-A.
So there are some critics of your work, Dr. Bredesen. They are saying that you need more large-scale clinical trials, you know, because they see you as a heretic. So what do you say to those people?
Well, first of all, I agree. Fine, we're going to do more work. But here, there's something called compassionate use, which they're forgetting about, unfortunately. When childhood leukemia was a major problem with nothing to do for it in the 1940s, Dr. Dana-Farber said, I have an idea that they may be responding to an anti-folate approach. It was a bizarre approach, and it actually killed some of the initial people. We haven't done that to anyone, but it killed some of the initial patients, but it helped a few of them. And so it was compassionate use. When you have nothing, you have to start somewhere. So we have taken step by step by step. So we started with one person, then we went to anecdotes, then we published 100 people, then we published a proof of concept trial. Now we are going to be publishing a randomized controlled trial. So if you don't want to reverse cognitive decline, don't read our work, don't worry about it. But and if you've got something better, by all means, we're only interested in best outcomes. Currently, the best outcomes that have been published have been with our protocol. So you want to wait? That's fine. That's no problem. I don't blame you. But if you believe in compassionate use for people who have no hope otherwise, this is what's gotten the best results so far.
What are some supplements that people should think about taking?
Yeah. And so, as I mentioned, targeted supplements based on what you need. But some of the ones that I particularly like that are in common use and can be very helpful. One is one called Resolvins, specialized pro-resolving mediators. And because they have a very nice, strongly anti-inflammatory effect, because part of what's going on in your brain is inflammation. And these were developed by Dr. Charles Sirhan at Harvard. Did a very nice job discovering and then developing these specialized pro-resolving mediators. Another one that I happen to like is nicotinamide riboside, which increases the NAD. It's part of the energy in your brain. It comes back to this energetic piece. And then I also happen to like S-acetyl glutathione, or you could also use N-acetylcysteine, so-called NAC, because these are part of detox. They can help you with detox. So all of those can be very beneficial. There are other things that can be very helpful, probiotics and prebiotics to improve your gut microbiome. The bottom line is, when I was training, we were told the armamentarium is zero. There's nothing you can do to prevent or reverse cognitive decline. That's turned out to be absolutely false. The armamentarium is huge, and it's growing. And so everyone now can find out where they stand, what are the things that are giving them risk, and to address these things, we should be able to make this problem of cognitive decline with aging, whether it's Alzheimer's or just age-related cognitive decline, very rare, which is what it should be. It should be much more rare than what it is currently, where so many people are having problems. We see people even in their 20s and 30s who are already having brain fog. And so we can all do much, much better.
It does. I see so many overlaps with other things that we've been talking about, like the problems of obesity and diabetes with amputations. And if the standard American diet seems to be, America's most wanted on this thing, that's the problem.
That's absolutely right. And it is a big problem. And just having metabolic syndrome, which comes from the standard American diet, more than doubles your risk for cognitive decline with aging.
And so eat greens, varied, colorful plate, green plate.
That's KetoFlex 12-3, yes. Plant-rich, mildly ketogenic diet is what has worked best.
Alcohol, avoid alcohol.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to have an occasional little bit of, once or twice a week, no problem. You don't want to get to the point where, you can't stand up. You just, because there's no question that damage, as it's very clear, it damages your ability to think straight.
But take care of yourself. You do not want to burden, I don't want to say burden, but you don't want to have this happening to you and your family.
It's so true. It tears families apart. It makes people destitute. It is a huge problem, and it's one that we can dramatically reduce now.
Dr. Dale Bredesen, thank you so much for coming on, talking to you about your new book, The Ageless Brain, a guide for anyone looking to take control of their brain health before cognitive problems begin. It was great talking to you.
Thank you so much, David.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.